Welcome to Prince Watch, the all-inclusive podcast for the upcoming Half-Blood Prince film. My name's Aaron, also known as Ariel Grotter on the Chamber of Secrets forums.
Hey, this is Scott, also known as LCBaseball22 on the forums.
This podcast contains spoilers about the upcoming film. If you wish not to be spoiled, please do not listen. Okay, it's episode 10. This episode, we're going to go over some of the news first, and then we're going to get to the major news of this past fortnight, which has been the announcement that the Motion Picture Association of America has slapped Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince with a PG rating there, and we'll discuss that in depth later in the show. And then we're going to be moving on to three chapters of our list, with Sectum Sempra, After the Burial, and Horcruxes.
Alright, well, first up in news this past few weeks, we have a new picture. It's quite small, but it's of the trio, and it appears to be an alternate shot of the necklace scene, I think, because of, like, the background and the clothes they're wearing.
Yeah, those clothes seem really familiar now.
Yeah.
I just automatically got where that was just because of those clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, there was supposed to be some preview or something on this channel, too, but it never
showed up. I think we just kind of over-exaggerated that.
All right, so then we had some comments from Dan Radcliffe about the film and the fans in general. He said, "I think the thing we certainly tried to do in this one was strike a balance between the darkness," Radcliffe says. "I mean, the one thing when I read the script I could always yearn for was more darkness and more of that real intense stuff, because I enjoy doing that more. But hopefully this time we have struck a balance between that darkness and a certain comedy in this film. And what I think we've managed to do is not make it that kind of comedy that is farcical and pulling faces. It's not that kind of comedy at all. It's much more subtle than that, and hopefully people will find it funny. That's the aim anyway." He goes on to say, "So I think the majority of the people out there, because the fan base has grown at about the rate the films have come out, we've managed to keep making them darker and dark enough to maintain the interests of these people. And I think actually through making the films dark, we gained a lot. And also through people like director David Yates directing them, a certain amount of respect has been gained for the films as cinema." I just thought they were ironic considering the film's been rated PG now.
Just ignoring the ring. Just ignoring the ring for a minute. If you just went off the comments, it does sound like a dark film. Like, they're always saying it's a dark film. And ignoring the rating, which we're going to discuss later, it's a dark film. And you can't ignore that, even with the rating there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the tone of it can be dark, but I just don't think it's going to be as effective with with a PG rating. The tone of it should still be dark. Like, Prisoner of Azkaban had a dark tone, yet it was PG.
Yeah. And you can see David Yates talks about this again, the darkness.
Yeah, both Dan and David, like, how many times, 10 times or whatever, the word darkness was mentioned. It's kind of it's the popular word they're throwing around for the films.
Really, because this next piece of news.
That seems.
This next piece of news, he goes on to say.
David Yates, yeah. Meantime, Harry struggles to get on with the usual teenage pressures of school activities and budding romance. We've got some really playful sequences and some material that obviously dips into the darker world of Potter, director David Yates said. As the series matures, it tonally does get darker overall. It's sort of inevitable as you follow the material. The kids are getting older, more mature and complex.
They're still mentioning the dark word.
Yeah.
Like, I hate people thinking, oh, it's got a PG rating, so it's not going to be dark. But they're still mentioning the dark word. Everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's still saying it's still getting dark. It was
dark, and it was PG, but...
But they're still saying darker, like they always do.
Yeah. It's not the darkness so much as the violence and the disturbing aspects of the source material that are going to have to be toned down in order to get that PG to scrape by with a PG rating.
Just the picture association's gone mental a bit, but hey, we can just save that till later. Next piece of news, what's that?
Logo. There's the official logo, apparently. I don't know. It's nothing different than what was on the teaser poster, if you can even call it that, supposedly, that was released months ago.
Yeah, it does.
Quite exciting.
It looks very interesting. Just a bit of a black background with a Harry Potter.
A bit silverish. It's like a dark grayish shadows and stuff on it.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to be any different.
I don't see any difference in the trailer. Said looks pretty much the same as what was in the trailer, right?
It's a bit different, actually. But...
Oh, is it? Looks the same.
Yeah,
to
like
me.
I don't know. I'm
anyway, it's.
I just want to say something. I noticed we had a breaking news segment in episode 5 with the international trailer. Now we have one in episode 10.
You are, of course, wondering why I brought you here tonight.
Actually, sir, after all these years, I'll just sort of go with it.
Okay, so we've got a bit of breaking news. Well, it may just be a rumor, but because it hasn't shown up on other sites yet, but a foreign site, Portkey, says, I'll read it here and you can make your own decision, but we might be getting another trailer at the end of this month, and as well as a poster, finally a poster. It's been long enough. The translation here from Italian is, we have been informed that in America, the last full trailer of the 6th film adaptation, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, will be screened before the Vision of Inkheart on 23rd of January. Also the same day seems to be rescreened before the announcement trailer with copies of Dark Knight and IMAX Cinema. For those who do not know, the Warner Brothers film will redeploy Dark Knight to point to $1 billion in cash. And finally, news that surely will affect more click to read more. A source reveals that by 30th of January will be available to the delight of fans everywhere the teaser poster of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. See you soon with more updates. So, treat it as a rumor, but might be another trailer, and it sounds like maybe, you know, at the least a teaser poster finally, so... It's just, the only thing I can't tell is whether or not they are talking about the last trailer that was shown with Twilight being re-shown with this movie, or a new trailer, as in the last trailer we will get till the film, and after this they're just going to start with TV spots and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we're getting a new poster.
Like, might have, huh?
We're getting a poster. Honestly, we're getting a poster, and it's the film was meant to come out, and we haven't even got a poster yet. Honestly.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, by next episode they'll come out. It's exciting. Okay, so these are
maybe another trailer. I don't know. It's hard to say if that's what it sounds like to me. The last full trailer. We've only got one full trailer. So it's either saying that there's going to be one final trailer,
or that it's going to be
just coming out the end of this month, or it was the last trailer that was with Twilight is going to be also shown with Inkheart.
Yeah. I hope it's a new trailer. But they're kind of...
But would that make sense? Trailer. This is the very last trailer. Well, I guess then there's going to be TV spots and things. But
yeah. Wait, we usually get an international one with the full one, the same round about the same time. And it only says that in America, the last full trailer. They don't say anything about the rest of the world. So we might get another one at the same time. It means full and like... So like, we might be getting international and a full one at the same time. Sorry. I'm getting excited. And then we had like 5 trailers. Ooh.
Yeah. When generally is the... I know everything's all different this time. Rules and everything are all different. But when is the last... when is the last trailer usually?
3 months beforehand.
Before a movie? Like 2-3 months, I thought? When the last trailer for any movie comes out? Because we looked at the
outro. Because
most movies only have 2 trailers, right? A teaser trailer and a full trailer.
Teaser, full, and international.
And international. But that doesn't generally come out until 2 or 3 months before the film, right?
Yeah, but it's different. Remember, it's different. We got... The one we got was Twilight.
Started promotion so early this time because of not realizing they were going to push it back. But so I guess then what it would be is that this could be the last trailer, and then after this they're going to start all the TV promotion and TV spots and things. But there won't be any more trailers after this.
Which is a bit
sad. At least that's what it sounds like.
Really?
Other than maybe international.
But you don't want 10 trailers. You don't want to have 10 trailers. It's just super...
Oh, I know. But, obviously the promotion is different this time, but I just thought it's weird that we're getting the last trailer 6 months still before the movie. Was it 6 months?
So, yeah. So is it our breaking news little segment? Okay, that's all for the news. Now we're going to move on to the biggest news, and it's so big it's having its own little segment, and this is the segment that we're going to introduce. It's our discussion segment, and we're going to kind of teaser it with this huge bit of news about the PG rating.
So the big news then, I guess, is, it's been rated PG for some reason, and everybody's pretty shocked by it because... as you probably all know, the last two films were PG-13, Order of the Phoenix and Goblet of Fire. So I think everybody expected it to continue with the PG-13 rating through the end of the series. And possibly even R for Deathly Hallows. That'll never happen because
that
they
won't
don't
happen.
Lose the small amount of kids, but some people think it could. So I guess we're going to... bring us
we'll
some
just talk
discussion questions.
Yeah, so... Okay. In the thread, and this was first brought up, Vince put together some questions, and we just changed them a little bit, not too much, and then talk about in the podcast. We kind of hoped there'd be a few more people. It's just me and Scott at the moment. And so we'll just go through this and get some discussion out of it. So, first question is, who do you think is to blame, or not really blame, but who you think is responsible for the PG rating, in your opinion? Warner Brothers or the MPAA? You go first, Scott.
I think it's actually the MPAA. Because from what you mentioned, and I didn't think of this until you brought it up, but... WB had made it known or whatever with the test screenings, right, that it was expected to be a PG-13 film. So it seems that that's what they were going for. I don't think that they necessarily were shooting for a PG. It's surprising that they haven't made any comment on it, though. I thought maybe we would have heard something from them the following weeks.
Yeah. I'm a bit shocked you agree with me. I thought you'd say Warner Brothers, because I know how many people hate Warner Brothers. Yeah, I love Warner Brothers too
much. Yeah, but the MPAA is the one that rated
it. Yeah, they're the one that rated it.
Personally, I think the MPAA has a screw loose.
It's got nothing to do with the Warner Brothers, unless they said they were shooting for PG. Which they weren't saying they were shooting for PG. They were shooting for PG-13.
And I guess they changed the board or whatever votes on the films quite frequently, so it could be that they're just new board members.
Yeah, I think it was Misha. It's actually Misha told me there's like a dozen people or something apparently, and like they change each time, and you never know what you're going to get. That sounds a bit weird.
Yeah, well, like some of the films that have been rated PG the last couple of years have been questionable. Like I just watched the Narnia films yesterday, and those certainly should not have been PG. The only thing that kept them probably, if anything, from being PG-13 is that there was really no blood in them, but there was a lot of violence.
And of course, there is the case of The Dark Knight being PG-13 when so many people wanted it being R. Like, that's happened in the past year.
Well, honestly, I see the same thing possibly happening with Half-Blood Prince, where
they have the same release year in the case of a release date in the case of a year. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know. I just see that some of the parents possibly being outraged that, they kind of are being falsely misled possibly by having a PG rating and taking their kids to it and then, not being happy with WB or the MPAA or whatever for rating it such. So our second question was, how does Half-Blood Prince having a PG rating affect you and your anticipation for this film? Does it lessen your excitement? If it doesn't affect you, why not?
Well, I'll go first, and I think that it's not affecting me because it's not my country. I mean... it's not going to affect me because I still think it's going to get M, which is what Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix got here. That's what I still think. And you said Anania, they got M, or Prince Caspian, I looked up. That got M here.
Oh, they did?
Even though it got PG.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the UK rates it.
Yeah, and Australia and here too.
What the last two got?
Yeah, those got 12A in the UK.
Yeah. I don't know. It lessens my excitement a bit just because I'm more worried about it now, more cautionally optimistic even than before, I guess. More on the side of caution than optimism. Of course, I'll still see it because I've been waiting for this like forever now, it seems. The first reaction was that I was really pissed. I was like, "Oh, I'm not going to see this film now." You know, this is the last straw. But no, I'll see it. It's just not.
To be honest, this was actually one of those points which it was like the delay. I had a sudden bit of, oh no, and then after a couple of hours, I was like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a point I was like, oh no, and then I took a while to think about it, and like, this is nothing. This doesn't change a thing.
So, move on to the third question.
I'll ask this.
You can go first. Or you want to ask it? Alright.
Do you feel Half-Blood Prince deserves a PG rating in America, or does it deserve a higher rating?
I'd say going by the source material, definitely not. True, it is the most comedic, humorous of the series. It's got a lot of lighthearted moments. But the dark moments are also very dark. The darkest in the series up to this point until we get to Deathly Hallows. And Sectum Sempra scene actually is, if not the darkest, because Snape's death is actually probably the worst in the next film to come up, but is a very gory scene the way that it's described in the book. It's really, I see it as a roller coaster of dark to light moments all throughout, starting with the Muggle attacks that happened at the beginning of the book, and then you had the confrontation with Draco on the train where he stomps on his nose and breaks it, got blood squirting everywhere, and then you got the cursed necklace attack where basically it's sort of like a kind of a seizure-like reaction with convulsing stuff, although they've cut that down for the movie so that Hagrid arrives just in time as she hits the ground and you don't see any of that to lessen the disturbingness there.
Well, that could be a bit disturbing, really, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen seizures before a couple times in real life, and they are extremely disturbing, so... But...
Yeah.
I mean, I like it being faithful to the source material, and when they do things like that, that they have to tone it down, it just kind of pisses me off a bit. But yeah, I don't think it deserves a PG rating. I don't know. Do you think it deserves a PG rating in the U.S., even though it's not your country?
Well, I didn't expect it to get one, I'll say that. I'm not that well-educated in American ratings to know enough, but yeah, I didn't expect it, and it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Well, the biggest factor with that is the established rules, kind of, that since the introduction of the PG-13 rating back in 1984, is that really you can have very no blood in a PG film. And I actually, like, researched this and looked it up. There's only, like, 20 films since then that have had any instances of blood in them. A lot of them have been in recent past five to ten years also, so that could signal a shift, but the Sectum Sempra scene, as bloody as it is in the book, there's no way that that could pass for a PG rating, so they had to have toned that down, or the MPAA is just kind of extremely lenient. What was that?
Well, unless they've changed the how they rate things, or unless all the people that were viewing were thinking, let's just have our kids watch blood all the time or something. But you never know what's possible.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that is true. America is a little messed up in that sense, too, because they're more tolerant of violence versus other countries where they're more tolerant of sex. It's we're backwards. But... do you think the PG rating will affect the film in any way? Will it make Half-Blood Prince a better or worse movie in your opinion?
No, because they were shooting for PG-13, so, and they just accidentally got a PG, so why would that change anything? Because they were filming for PG-13. And, yeah.
True, I do. I hope that's the case, because, I mean, we heard comments that, what was it like about the Inferi or whatever, that they were saying, this would be something that would be hard to pass even for, what was it, like 15A or something, whatever it is in the UK. But, you know, they were making it sound like it was going to be difficult to, you know, keep it PG-13 almost. So hopefully that's the case, and somehow they got a PG rating, not that they actually toned it down. But if not, I'm a bit worried because live-action PG films in general tend to suck. other than you know, the Star Wars films and the first three Harry Potter films. Those really are the only good popular live action PG films that there have been.
It's a Harry Potter film, then.
Hopefully it's as good as the first three. But the thing is, the first three, or the first two at least, it was appropriate for those. The kids were younger.
They were only 12.
I think PG was more appropriate for those. I don't know if PG is appropriate for Half-Blood Prince. It's the second to last book where they're 16, 17 years old. And
PG probably wasn't appropriate maybe for Prisoner of Azkaban either. And they were shooting PG for Goblet of Fire 2 and accidentally got PG-13 and just did it.
Yeah, probably.
That's what happened. It did happen.
Yeah.
So
it's just in general, live action PG films don't appeal to older audiences for a number of reasons. Either they just feel less mature, the humor is too childish, they're not scary enough, they're not dramatic enough, they're not romantic or sexual enough, they're not violent enough. There's many different, you know, it depends on the film, but there's many different reasons. Hopefully
see the trailers and see how great it is.
Going for PG-13 and they just got PG somehow. What are you saying?
They'll see the trailer, see how great it is, forget about the rating.
Yeah, that was weird too. The trailer, the first trailer was rated 12A, wasn't it? And isn't that the first time, I think, that a trailer has been rated that? So it'll be really interesting to see what it gets in the UK. I don't think any of the trailers have been 12A before. So,
okay, next question. Your turn. Yeah. Would you bring younger children, like under 13, to go see Half-Blood Prince?
I don't know. It depends on the kid, but probably not. I tend to think that the books up to Goblet of Fire were appropriate for, you know, 9-10-year-olds, younger kids, and after Goblet of Fire, they were more for young adults. So I don't know if I'd even let someone under 13 read the later books. But
I read Half the Prince when I was 13, or something like that.
Well, maybe I just had stricter parents then. But like, I wasn't even able to watch. I didn't watch my first PG-13 film until I think it was 12 or 14 or something like that. But, and I don't know, most kids were watching them a lot earlier. But, it has nothing to do with the. First of all, I don't think they're just not going to appeal to them as much. I mean, all the romance, which probably has been cut down a bit from the book because it was constantly throughout the book. Not to say there isn't going to be a lot of it in the movie, but
now with the Harry Geneva's gone.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, but well, that's one of them gone.
I don't know. I just don't think at least when I was 8 or 9 or whatever, like I, you know, there was nothing appealing about a kissing scene or ever in a movie. And actually, my parents would like, you know, tell me to cover my eyes or something. Maybe they were just too strict about things like that. I didn't find it appropriate. I don't think that I would find that enjoyable at all, the romance and stuff. And the violence maybe that was in the book would be too much too. It depends on the kid though, what he can handle. Some kids like scary movies even when they're young, so others get nightmares. I mean, I imagine a lot of kids are getting nightmares from the Emperor.
Yeah, my answer to this is that under 10's no go probably, and the 10 to 13 range only if they've read the book and know what's to come.
Yeah. Under teens, yeah. I mean, that's basically what the PG-13 rating says, that you know, if they're under 13, use extreme caution and judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not PG-13.
But it should have been.
Still, the PG rating is still, if you're a child, you have to supervise them, whatever it is.
Yeah, right. Well, it's the same with both, actually.
It's similar, but it's still similar,
yeah,
but it's just...
Neither of them are actually restricted. The only one that's actually restricted that you not go to unless you are that age is R. Anyone can actually go to.
It's like...
your PG-13. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, it's
but
like
they have
how,
no way
PG
like checking ID.
M, like the M's. Yeah, the M is, say, suitable for 16 and over, but, like, you can take little kids to go see it. And I bet lots of little kids went to go see Goblet of Fire.
Well, technically, I think a baby could walk into a PG-13 film. They might have,
if they had
you know, they might stop and say, where's your parent or whatever, but technically they could. Restricted.
Do you think that maybe Warner Brothers could or would re-edit or reappeal for a PG-13? Because, like, they haven't really made it publicly announced.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they've said that they have got PG, but they haven't really said we're happy for PG or anything like that.
The filmmakers tend to think along the same lines that people do, just kind of common sense-wise, that a PG film is going to appeal to a broader audience, give you more to draw from, and thus create bigger box office when that doesn't seem to be the case. So they probably won't have any problem with it being PG. But it depends, maybe. Probably not.
Well,
we haven't heard anything.
Who would you think has last word on something like that? Would you think it's Warner Brothers, or would you think it's like the director, David Yates? Warner Brothers, it's probably different.
I'd say Heyman,
PG.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, Heyman, true.
Since he's
the
producer. I think Heyman would have the last word.
I don't know, do we trust Heyman or not?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know, I do. You don't? I think that these movies would be a lot worse off if Heyman wasn't at the helm.
I really do trust
Heyman. I think that, I get the feeling that he actually is, you know, somewhat of a fan of the series.
Mm. Well, he's been there
really
since the start. He knows quite a lot.
Wants to make the best movie possible.
Mm.
I don't think he's just in it for the money.
Yeah,
but, you know, going back to the money, like, I just kind of want to talk in general. You know, this movie is still going to make a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
It might not make quite as much money being PG as PG-13.
Or
now, the first Harry Potter movie actually made the most of any of them.
Yeah.
And that was PG. But that was
the
very first film, and the hype was through the roof for that. After that, you have the two PG-13 films with the second and third highest box office out of the films. But the thing is, this movie has no competition, really, right? I mean, we were looking at the other movies around it next year, and I just don't see any competition. It's possible it could, you know, top the box office for 4 or 5 weeks, even, as Dark Knight
it's
did.
Just, you know, that delay really did help it with the box office. And that's why they did it.
Yeah.
There's no competition there. The writer's strike just sucked out that whole year, basically.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's no way to know whether it had it's going to have an adverse effect or not, unless, you know, you released a PG-13 version and a PG version and compared the box office. But
they're likely to do that.
Obviously, you can't do that.
Well, if that did happen, everyone would just go see the PG-13 version and the PG, bye-bye.
Yeah. But it would be cool with, you know, some films, they have a different rated version released on DVD. I don't see that happening with Harry Potter.
That
but
might have been, say, like,
that would be nice.
Extended edition in like 2012 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're still clutching at straws there.
Yeah. But how much did the past movies make? I mean, this one could...
This one could top... worldwide.
Did Dark Knight top a million? Or, I mean, not a million.
No, it's still around just billion. Under a billion worldwide. It's just under, like, 990-something.
Yeah.
It's going to make a billion minute
rate. I think that... Just because there's not going to be any other competition, that it could approach possibly matching Dark Knight next or the from last.
It's going to make at least 950, I think. And
yeah.
I think that might be the highest. I think it might outgross Philosopher's Stone, possibly, maybe.
Right.
But though because. Because everyone's going to be, what's the word? Not seeing it because they're all angry at Warner Brothers. You never know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's all the people that say, well, I don't know if there still is, but that said they were going to boycott the film, or
yeah, it's just stupid.
Oh, whatever. And but these are hardcore fans. I'm pretty sure that you'll see them there at the midnight release. Despite what they say.
All the day. Like me.
But you never know. So, overall, do you believe this was a wise or foolish decision of the Warner Brothers and the MPAA?
I think it's a bit foolish of the MPAA because now everyone hates either Warner Brothers or the MPAA. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people just, can I say to everyone listening that, why are you just so determined to hate this film? Honestly.
Well, they've given us a lot of reasons, that's for sure. Or maybe not WB has, but you know, with the long wait for the trailers and just the torture that they put us through, moving it back a year and... They've certainly tested our patience and determination.
They have. But you can take that as, now you know how to wait, you can take that skill and take it somewhere else. Like, the wait for the trailer, you can take that skill and make it your wait for the movie skill.
Yeah. Well, it'll be nice that there's not as much of a wait for Deathly Hallows, too. That'll be good.
Yeah. And but, since Half-Blood Prince is so good.
Yeah, they've certainly tested our... endurance, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, the way I wanted to answer this, I guess, I think it was a foolish decision. I don't think it was WB necessarily, but it might end up affecting WB. I've heard everyone say that it was a good idea because a PG rating is going to sell more tickets and have a higher box office. And it's actually quite ironic because the box office stats do not suggest that this is true. Yes, it would make sense that a film rated PG would allow for a broader audience demographic, but as we said, it doesn't matter because neither of them are restricted. There's many factors that determine a box office success, but if we focus solely on the results by the film rating, if you look at the top 100 worldwide box office standings up to this point, and the number of respective films of each rating, 14 of them were rated R, 56, over half, were rated PG-13, only 22 were rated PG, 14 of those being live action, the 5 Star Wars, the 3 Harry Potter, 2 Narnia, Jaws, which actually would now, or back then, have been PG-13, but it was before 1984. E.T., Home Alone, Night at the Museum, and then you have 8 animated, rounding out the PG, and then you have 8 rated G, all animated, also in the top 100. It's possible there could be another variable introducing bias, and simply that there's way more PG-13 films than PG nowadays. But as I said earlier, live action PG films generally don't do well, and they typically suck for those reasons mentioned. So actually nowadays, with the addition of the PG-13 rating, this is what all the filmmakers are aiming for. If you want the largest box office, you go for PG-13 nowadays, because nobody's restricted from watching it, and you don't alienate the teens and young adults by not appealing to them. After all, they are your biggest target crowd. The teen to 20-something is the demographic that sees films most. They have the most time on their hands. They're always looking for something to do with friends or to go out on a date. And they flock to the theaters week after week. And most of them can drive themselves also, so they don't have to nag their busy parents to take them to the movies. So, yeah, I'm surprised that WB isn't annoyed that they didn't get the rating they were shooting for, if they were shooting for PG-13, which seemed to be the case, and that they haven't said anything about it yet. And I think it could end up affecting them. Because what I see, now it could be wrong, but what I see happening is you're not really going to get any more kids by having it be PG than PG-13, because the same kids that were going to see it when it was PG-13 have their parents drag them or take them, whatever, are still going to see it, but you're not going to get a whole lot more. But what you may end up getting is a bunch of the older kids being turned off by the PG rating. It's possible. It's hard to say. That's just what I could see happening. Yeah, I guess that wraps up the PG versus PG
discussion. Yeah.
On to the list.
Yep, on to the list. Here we go.
This podcast was created as a companion to our Hepler Prince list, which contains everything known about the film thus far. Each episode, we'll discuss chapters from the book and how they translate to the film.
And now we have the list. And our next chapters are chapters 22, 23, and 24. But we're not doing them in order this time, because in the film they aren't in order, because chapter 24, Septim's Emperor, has been moved.
Oh. And it, okay. Confused me, because I was looking at the list here and I saw 24, 22, 23. That makes sense.
It's been moved.
What?
After the burial and the Horcrux chapters. So we're going to start off with chapter 24, and our first note is the move. This was first evidence from leaked scripts, and we noticed the script numbers were all different, like they're out of order. So this was our first evidence that the scene had been moved. And then when the test screening came, this again was confirmed. And next we have a picture of Harry talking to Katie Bell, possibly showing the scene from the book when they talk to each other after Katie returns from the hospital. This could be another scene, or it could be a different time.
It's still a crappy quality picture, but I guess we probably aren't going to get any better.
It's the only picture we have.
Agenda book or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Scanned, not a very good image, but...
Do you think that might be where it is, or do you think it might be to do with Quidditch trials or something like that?
I don't know. It could be when she returns from the hospital. I don't think that they would have that scene necessarily. In the book, wasn't it that he asked her when she got back from the hospital if she remembered who gave it to him, gave her the necklace? I think that's how it went down, but
I actually think I have a weird feeling that this might be a cutscene.
But you already noticed Draco coming out of the bathroom, so I'm guessing that's not what it is. What do you think it is?
Yeah. Deleted scene. We're never going to see it.
A deleted scene? Yeah, probably. Yeah. There is a lot of that sort of stuff in calendars and agenda books in the past that never made it into the films. Like the waterfall scene from Goblet of Fire.
That waterfall scene. Still hoping for that extended edition in 2012.
Yep.
Okay, next. The Septum Sempra scene appears to be confirmed due to a set report. We couldn't get into Moni Myrtle's bathroom because it was locked. They filmed the Septum Sempra scene there last week. They told me that Tom had to lie in the fake blood water and water for hours. He had a prosthetic chest on which pumped out fake blood, and for each new take, he had to get cleaned up and dry his hair before starting again. There are some pictures floating about of the scene, and they look like Tom's lying dead in a pool of blood. Very freaky for his friends to see.
See, and this this was very early on from, you know, that one fan that visited the set and everything, and this was like big news that she had posted this huge kind of, it was basically like a bunch of spoilers and things. Like, we hadn't heard anything about the film, and we got so excited over this, and especially this scene, because it sounded like they were doing it, you know, at least justice somewhat, with the... pumping out blood, but I just don't see how they can do that in a PG film unless they've really changed the rules recently.
Yes, that's probably it. And I just want to ask, what do you think about them doing it in Moaning Mule's toilet when it's been set up in Chamber of Secrets? It's the girl's toilet.
Just
kind of. Well, I suppose all the toilets kind of look the same.
It wasn't that way in the book, I thought.
No.
Moni Myrtle had just gone into the boys' bathroom.
And
Draco
Harry
was in there.
Why you okay. use toilets as a boys' toilet?
Yeah, she goes from. She wanders around, but. Yeah. And then the next point, Moni Myrtle's cut. This really disappointed me because, she didn't really have that big of a role in the book, but she did have, one powerful line, I thought, where she. She started murdering in the bedroom, and I just thought that having that could really intensify the scene. And, even if they toned it down or whatever, like I felt they did with, snake attack in Order of the Phoenix, it would at least give the audience, clue them in that what Harry did was not good and, almost lethal, actually. If Snape hadn't shown up, he could have easily bled to death very quickly because he was, multiple cuts.
Well, if she doesn't say it, then you just show it, don't you?
Huh?
You have to show it.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to tell that. They just show that.
Well, it's possible Nigel maybe is going to scream it.
Yeah, that's
the next point.
I'll move on to that. The test screening viewers have described the scene. Here's a few quotes from their reviews. The first one is, when Harry and Draco fight in the toilets, Nigel sits frozen in a cubicle. Also, we have, the scene is truly dark and serious. The touch of humour with the kid and on the loo was a surprisingly well-placed moment of this humour, as it did not spoil the mood. You think it would, but it doesn't. It's only about 5 seconds of screen time. Something tells me it may be cut later, but I think
still
they should leave it in.
That.
It's actually more of a fight scene. It's kind of cool in a way, and yes, Harry is obviously disturbed by what he's done and horrified at the effect that the spell has. For those asking about the bloodiness of Septum Sempra scene, it was not very bloody, but many of the wounds on Draco did not appear to be gushing. Before you get upset, I think the extra blood is probably just a special effect not yet added. The scene implied much more blood than was seen. I'm pretty sure this will be added in later. When Harry casts Septum Sempra, Snape runs in and heals Draco's wounds with a spell that sounds almost like a song. Snape does not use legitimacy on Harry, and Harry runs straight out of the bathroom and into McGonagall, who is standing in the doorway. Snape does not question Harry whatsoever. He does not even speak to him. No, Runel was lip.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know what she was saying about the extra blood or whatever, and the wound's not gushing. Like, hopefully that's true.
It still was incomplete. It still was incomplete.
Yeah.
And she does say that it implied more blood than was seen.
But we have no idea what they've done, you know, since then. Heck, for all we know, they may have cut Semperra. I mean, that would suck, but it's possible. I don't know. It's just possible. That would definitely explain how it got a PG if they did, though.
Why would they?
Anything's possible. Or plausible, I should say. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not that I want the film to be gory and everything. I just want it to be realistic. If you don't have bleeding wounds or whatever, it's just not going... It's going to seem very fake and cheesy, I think. And I just think that blood gushing, whatever, yeah, if you go over the top, it's cheesy. But I don't know. That was one of the things I noticed with the Narnia films, was that there was all these sword fighting battles, but there was no blood, and like it didn't even look like they were striking each other. Like they were stopping their blade a couple feet before the other person's face or chest or whatever. It was just really fake looking. But yeah, so
yeah.
Well, we have a shot from the trailer.
Yeah. Shows Draco in the bathroom here. And I remember when we did that analysis that I was saying how white that shot was and liking the cinematography,
yeah.
And I feel like saying the same thing. I just love the cinematography of this film.
Mm-hmm. My guess here is that he's going to notice Harry in the mirror and turn around or something. This is probably right before Harry walks in. I think it happened something like that in the book. I think he noticed him in the mirrors or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Well, that's good if they're like that. Though, he was talking to Mercer.
Yeah, the whole fight battle thing happens and Snape comes and all that. So then we have the, they go off to hide the book.
Yeah, Harry, Ginny kiss has been altered. And we've talked about this a lot now. Ginny takes Harry to the room of requirement to hide the book. She kisses him in there. It's their first kiss. The relationship is done a bit differently compared to the book. There's a lot of build-up since there wasn't much Ginny in the other movies. In fact, I'd say there's more Harry-Ginny in the movie. There's a lot of Ginny. She's very canon-like, and you can see that especially from her first scene. The kiss between Harry and Ginny in the room of requirement isn't sad. This is the kiss scene in the third sneak peek. And I remember first getting that sneak peek and thinking, is that a dream? Please be a dream.
Yeah, it upset upset a lot of people. Still is upsetting people, but I don't know. Hopefully they have a plan for Deathly Hallows, because they got to do something to amp her up a bit more or whatever, their relationship at least. I mean, it does sound like she's in this movie a lot, but an actual romance and stuff happening between them is kind of non-existent other than, I don't know, it sounds like this kiss has been made into more of like a quick peck. At least that's what it looks like. We haven't seen the whole thing, but it does sound like it's quick. And she walks away before he even realizes that he was kissing her.
Yeah. About Deathly Hallows, well, at least they've got the same screenwriter. And I'm sure Steve Clovis has had a plan the whole time. And
same thing with
Dobby,
of course, is that, you know, he must have some sort of plan for him because,
yeah,
you know, he's been confirmed now for... I think, for Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. Test screen viewers describe the scene. After Septim Sempra, Hermione and Ginny band together and tell Harry to hide the potion of the book, so not even Harry can find it. Ginny takes Harry to the room of requirement and makes him close his eyes while she hides the book. Then she kisses him briefly. By the time he opens his eyes, she has vanished.
I just want to say again, the thing that irks me the most probably about this whole thing with the Room of Requirement scene is that they can't take a simple 5 seconds to show that diadem, so to make it easier, something to flash back to in Deathly Hallows. That, you know, they came upon in the book.
But still, Harry's got his eyes closed, so he won't even be able to see it.
Well, they've changed it. But, again, they're going to have to do something different with Deathly Hallows. I don't know how.
Well, Jenny might be able to
remember that. All these horcruxes that are kind of being pushed to the back burner here in Half-Blood Prince, they're going to have to figure out some way for him to find out
like
where they are.
Clovis has a plan.
Yeah, let's hope so. I do have faith in his script writing for the most part.
Yeah.
I think he's done well with the series so far. So.
Yeah. And also we got a script of this scene, which is quite good because now we know a bit more about this. And we recorded the lines for the script earlier. So the script, Scott, you're doing the narration, right? And we had Britt do Ginny, and I was doing Harry, and Scott, you were doing Ron. So let's
do it.
You've got to hide it today.
Scene 105, interior, 7th floor corridor, later in the day. Harry, potions book in hand, follows Ginny past the empty birdcage and down the corridor. When she pauses, turns to the wall, and shuts her eyes.
Take my hand.
Scene 106, internal room of requirement, seconds later, day. Ginny and Harry materialize.
The room of requirement.
Ginny nods, turns away. Harry follows. New angle, seconds later. Harry eyes the shelves that tower above him and the odd things they hold. A small cage bearing the skeleton of some long-dead creature. A jar of quivering eyeballs which track him as he passes.
Over the years, if someone had a secret, if they wanted to conceal something, this is where they came. Some of these things are almost as old as the castle itself.
Who showed you this? First.
Fred and George, first year. I hid Tom Riddle's diary here for a time. Wish I'd left it.
As Ginny drifts off in memory, Harry studies her, then a scuffling sound is heard nearby. They turn, look off.
What was that?
They turn back, look at each other. Ginny smiles, then new angle behind a vanishing cabinet. Harry and Ginny approach. The scuffling grows louder. Harry reaches out, pulls aside the tapestry, and reacts. The cabinet door vibrates. Slowly, he opens it, and the black bird flies free in a rush of flapping wings.
See, you never know what you'll find up here.
Harry nods, looks back at the cabinet, mystified.
All right, close your eyes. That way you can't be tempted.
Ginny slips the book from his fingers and starts to back away. She mouths, close your eyes. As she leaves frame, camera pushes over it so slightly, in on Harry. Still, waiting. For a long moment, there is only silence. Then a shadow gently eclipses Harry's face.
There's something else, another secret of sorts, one of mine.
Ginny leans in then and places her mouth on Harry's.
That can stay hidden up here too if you'd like.
Harry opens his eyes, watches Ginny back away, then disappear around the corner. He stares at the empty air blinking, then watches the blackbird flutter overhead. Scene 107. Interior corridor, late afternoon. Harry, looking a tad dazed, walks aimlessly.
So, did you and Ginny do it?
Harry jumps, watches Ron appear.
What?
You know, hide the book.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, next we have multiple shots of the scene emerge from different places. We have Harry and Ginny walking together, which came from the ABC Family sneak peeks. We have Harry and Ginny staring at each other, which is just a picture we got from somewhere.
We had a bunch of shots from the very first sneak peeks back in December, though, too, didn't we? From the Order of the Phoenix DVD?
Yeah. Those are very similar to the ones from the ABC. Yeah. And then we have from the trailer, Harry and Ginny, I think Ginny coming back from the kiss, I think that was.
Yeah. The lighting is like way, it's a lot different there, I guess. But the one is not actual still, but, well, maybe it is.
Well, the still is, the light is hasn't got any lighting.
Darker, I guess. It looks different than the Room of Requirement in the last movie, that's for sure. Because it had a blue windows or tinge to the room. Blue lighting. Mm-hmm.
There also was a picture of the Room of Requirement that came from in the gender book. And you can see all the junk in there. And
It's like gold and yellowish tones this time. I like that.
Yeah. It
doesn't look as messy as I thought it would be. I thought there would be, like, stuff everywhere. Like, there's...
Really?
Really?
Because I did say there were aisles and
aisles
stuff.
And everything. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, it did. But, who was it? Somebody was saying that... Making the comment that it's not big enough or not messy enough, tall enough, whatever, like the piles of stuff that, like, you can't envision a battle going on in this room in the next movie in Deathly Hallows.
Really?
When you have that big battle in here. Because you can see, like, it looks like you can see from one side of the room to the other.
I don't think I can. I can see maybe a little
bit
of the wall at the far end.
But it can expand and morph, so. Maybe they'll do something with that.
Sure.
It'll be like Hagrid's hut. It'll keep changing.
Okay. According to test screen viewers, the Harry Ginny romance, a romantic relationship, is basically non-existent. There is really no implication that Harry and Ginny are dating, much to my dismay. It seemed much more that their feelings were made both very clear, but no further action was taken. No implied stolen hours in corners in the Hogwarts grounds. I don't really remember arms around one another, but Harry's response was a surprise for sure. It was really kind of forward Ginny-esque moment.
Yeah.
I've got used to how they film now.
True or whatever, like, In the book, there wasn't a whole lot, really, that, after they had that first initial common room kiss or whatever.
Yeah, the army
all kind of happened in one chapter, and it was kind of described in, like, a couple paragraphs, but it was there. Like, it said that they had been dating for a couple months, and people were talking about it, and they were, spending time by the lake, out on the grounds for hours at a time or whatever. But
and
it would be nice to have taken some of that stuff and expanded it and shown it on screen. But, they decided not to do that and change the relationship altogether. What were you saying?
I was just saying how people complain about the Harry Ginny romance in the book.
In the book, yeah. People wanted them to fix it in the film, which they probably haven't done.
I don't know if they fixed it,
satisfactorily
changed
to
it.
Those people. Unless, it's going to... Because they're going to build it up through this movie and then more in the next movie. Well, they have to in the next movie. It's the last movie.
It's two movies.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, hopefully they don't have to do something like have Ginny go along with them on the... I mean, that would just be drastically changing it, but some people have suggested that, and I just think that would be... Well, some people have suggested that. They want Ginny to go along on them with the trip, so hopefully that doesn't happen.
Clovis. and Yates too.
Not do that. Yeah. Okay. But they are going to have to build her up a lot early on, that's for sure.
Yeah, they'll probably make something special out of the kiss. They'll change the birthday kiss for sure a bit. Anyway, let's move on, or rather backwards if you want to think about it, moving from chapter 24 to chapter 22. So after all this, after the kiss, we have after the burial. And first in this chapter, we have that Daniel Radcliffe confirms the tragedy of Horace Slughorn will outweigh the comedy, and the memory retrieval is being filmed, or has been filmed by now. We should really change that.
Yeah. Well, for a while, people were suggesting or thinking that they wouldn't actually show that part.
Yeah,
or they
I found that really... I just like people that think they're just going to cut out chapters just because they can.
Well, or just cut the fake memory altogether just because it was the same sort of thing. I mean, they could have got around to other ways, but they did decide to keep it, and I guess that's good. Mm. Though I didn't particularly like the whole Aragog's death thing, but I don't think they're going to put us through the torture of seeing a dead, big dead spider. I don't know.
It appears the Aragog storyline will be filmed, or has been filmed. I really need to change this tense. Based on a statement made during pre-production, and it says, a lot is up in the air, but we do know that a giant dead spider has to be produced.
Yeah. But where is it? Somewhere later on or something? Somebody said we don't actually really see it?
Well, it's there.
Yeah. I mean, not that I care. Like, it's not scary or anything. It's just that I could have, care less if they had had that part in or not.
Vince is going mad in the chat because it says Aragog that you just bad worded on. Anyway. What was I going to say? Oh, that's right. It's nice that they make... No, wait. I'm going to say something else. It's nice that they make more connections to Chamber of Secrets, since this is so connected to that film or book or whatever you want to call it. Story.
Yeah, we get into that more with the Horcruxes next chapter.
Yeah, but also with Aragog and Borgin and Burke, stuff like that. There's lots of connections.
Yeah, through Borgin and Burke's. We don't actually go inside it, but we see it from the outside.
Yeah. Test screening viewers have described scene. We see the greenhouses, but no one a lesson. Harry on Felix finds Slughorn there, but no Sprout in the movie. Can I just pause for a second? I've played the Order of the Phoenix game, and the greenhouses are on a completely different side of the house. So, for Hagrid's hut. Do they miraculously move?
Yeah, but they moved Hagrid again,
too?
Remember?
Okay, whatever.
Who knows? Okay.
Yes, Aragog is on the screen for about 3 minutes, but he is dead. I think it would be quite easy for you to have your friend close his eyes during that moment.
Somebody apparently scared by it.
Slughorn says the same words over his body that he does in the book, word for word. I think this was Rachel who wrote this.
I think it was.
Yeah. I am wondering if this is sort of sad that I know that. What she said in brackets.
Yeah.
That is how long Aragog is on screen. We do get to hear Hagrid and Slughorn sing Odo the Hero, and Harry is funny in a few lines were true to the book while under the influence of Felix Felicis. You know, I can't remember the details of what Harry said to get the memory, but I do know, most definitely, what?
Well, it's just that I was thinking here, and I don't know what exactly they consider drug use, but you have alcohol, and then you also have the Felix, which could be considered a drug. Technically, any drug use gets an automatic PG-13. So I'm just wondering kind of how that went down. Especially the alcohol, because if they have that part where they're drunk and singing Odo the Hero, which it sounds like they did, because I think Rachel talked about them acting drunk or whatever, But yeah,
the MPI just lost it.
Probably pushing boundaries here with a lot of stuff. No, it was just
anyway. Yeah. You know, I can't remember the details of what Harry said to get the memory, but I know they most definitely did from canon, which had surprised me at the time because up until then the scene was very close to canon. Actually, I'm starting to remember, but before getting upset, please remember that I'm not remembering this at all, and the accuracy is questionable. But the gist of it is, Slughorn drunkenly starts to tell Harry about this fish he had that he loved and was so beautiful, but died. Towards the end of the story, he reveals that the fish was given to him by Lily, and just disappeared the day she died. Harry uses the story to persuade him to give the memory. Frankly, I thought it was rather lame, but then I believed that what happened in the book should have been there instead, so I wasn't listening to the story with a very open mind either.
It sounds like, you know, it's going to work fine, but why not just stick with what was in the book?
Yeah.
Was there a problem with not having set it up or something? I don't remember exactly what happened in the book.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I think
they were saying,
oh,
the hero.
I think he just
made
what
was in the book. Odo the hero was only there because they were talking about people who die young, and then they brought up Lily and James. And that, ugh, honestly, I don't get it.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I don't know. This should work.
Vince.
It's just a weird story about this fish.
This is what Vince says in the chat. It was, Harry brings up how Lily had a choice, and he knew that because of the Dementor memories in POA, A Prisoner of Azkaban, which were cut. So, I don't know. Did Clovis think that because just those that happened? But he knew that. Wait, was that in Philosopher's Stone? How his mother had a choice? I think so. Maybe.
I don't know. I'm trying to find it right now on my PDF.
I don't think it will.
Okay, I'm not sure what you're talking about with the Dementor memories, Vince, but here's how it went down in the book. It says, are the good die young, muttered Hagrid, blah, blah, blah. Great tears oozed out of his eyes. They're singing this thing he said, best witch and wizard of their age I never knew, terrible thing, terrible thing. And Slughorn thinks that he's criticizing, saying that his singing is terrible, because he says, sorry, can't carry a tune to save my life. And Hagrid says, wasn't talking about your singing, or Harry says Hagrid wasn't talking about your singing, he was talking about my mom and dad dying. And Hagrid says, oh dear, yes, that was terrible indeed. Terrible, terrible. And then they talk about it, and Harry makes him feel sad, and
Wait. Because it says here, something about, he told her to get out of the way, he told me she needed to die, he only wanted me, she could have run, but she didn't move, dad was already dead, she didn't want me to go to, he doesn't know all that in the film, he doesn't know anything about Godric's Hollow.
Oh, yeah, how did he discover in the film? How did he discover in the book at this point?
Through the Dementors screaming about it. And also Voldemort tells him in Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, in Philosopher's Stone?
He says his mother needed to die.
Yeah, okay, because all we saw was just the flashback, like in, or when Hagrid tells a story in the first film, but it wasn't really.
Yeah, and it's.
It wasn't the complete thing, hopefully we get when we get to Godric's Hollow in the last, or the second to last movie. Okay, I guess that makes sense then why they had to change that, possibly.
Okay.
I still think he could have made
say,
feel pity.
Yeah, I'll just say that Vince is sick, that's why he's not on, that's why we're communicating him through the chat. He would like to be on, but he's a bit sick. Okay.
I'm still looking at this thing here, but so I'm looking here, and this seems like a more powerful, more something that's going to stick in your memory kind of thing. Like, he states to Slughorn, you know, I am the chosen one. I have to kill him. I need that memory. and plays the pity side of it, and makes him feel sorry for how, you know, he gave up this memory or whatever to Voldemort, who ended up killing his mother. The way that it is in the book seems more powerful. Now, maybe it wouldn't have worked because they didn't have those other memories.
All
but
that extra.
Yeah.
So are we going to talk about him?
But they didn't get any chosen one a lot. The Slughorn memory, yeah.
No, I don't think. But I think they could have just left it in, even if that he didn't know that his mum had the choice not to die.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of things I don't get why they changed things. Perfectly fine. What was that?
I think the fish thing. Oh, I'm thinking that Clovis just likes fishes. Fish. No, fish.
Maybe. I don't know. What do you think of the fish story?
It's okay.
Think that's gonna be all right. You think it's lame? You think it's?
I don't see why Slughorn has a fish. He doesn't seem like a fish person.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, there's a trailer screenshot and a promotional picture which shows Slughorn extracting his memory, and he looks in completely yucky pain. I don't see what's so painful about memory. Because it's. And Dumbledore looks so painful doing it in Goblet of Fire, too. I don't know why they made it seem so painful.
I gotta bring this up here.
He's in pain. He's in pain extracting the memory from a trailer screenshot and a promotional picture. What's your thoughts on that? Go.
I don't know. There's not a whole lot. I think it would be somewhat painful to try to pull something out of your brain. You don't think so? Dumbledore looks in pain, didn't he? Was it Goblet of Fire?
Yeah, but in the books,
Hamlin looks like
it
was
painful,
was so painful
too.
You think this looks more painful?
No, it's just in the books.
I imagine it can't be
painful.
A pleasant experience pulling something out of your brain like that.
Mm. Okay.
Hard to say.
Can
you can't do that.
Now?
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, we need to move on. Okay, we have another script. Some reliable source on IMDb leaked a few pages of the script from the Horcrux scene.
Yes, this is a legit scene. It's been confirmed.
Yeah, by Rachel. And
with the exception of
Rachel.
Like one paragraph, but we're thinking that hasn't been completed effects-wise at the time of this test screen.
Yeah, we'll
talk
about that later because we've got a bit of few pictures of that part. And we've also kind of re-recorded some of this part. And Vince was Dumbledore, I was Tom Riddle, and Vince was Slughorn again, and I was Harry again. And we'll have you do the... Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Some of these lines have actually showed up in trailers and stuff, and we'll make that audio come in place of where they are.
Yeah.
How is he? Horace.
Harry shrugs, Dumbledore nods, then tips his hand. A long strand hangs suspended like glass. A pearl forms. And as it hangs, Harry's eyes shift. Notice a drawing on Dumbledore's desk. One of Tom Riddle's drawings seen at the orphanage. Of the cave and the distant outcropping. Then, the pearl drops. Scene 116, interior Slughorn's office, years past, night. As before, the crackling embers of the fire. Slughorn, a circle of six, Riddle commanding the room.
Sir, is it true that Professor Merrythought is retiring?
Slughorn chuckles, wags a sugar-encrusted finger at Riddle.
Now, Tom, I couldn't tell you if I knew, could I? I must say, my boy, I'd like to know where you get your information. more knowledgeable than half the staff. You are. By the way, thank you for the pineapple. You're quite right. It is my favorite. How is it you knew?
Intuition.
Riddle smiles, but his expression suggests intuition had nothing to do with it. Slughorn chuckles uneasily.
Good gracious, look at the time. Off you go, boys, or Professor Dippet will have us all in detention. Lestrange, Avery, don't forget your essays.
As the others file out, Slughorn busies himself with some papers when, ping, he turns, finds Riddle still there, standing by the crystal hourglass.
Look sharp, Tom. You don't want to be caught out of bed after hours.
I know a secret shortcut or two.
Yes, I imagine you do. Something on your mind, Tom?
Yes, sir. I couldn't think of anyone else to go to. The other professors. Well, they're not like you. They might misunderstand.
Go on.
Riddle slips off the ring on his left hand, begins to roll it between his fingers. It is set with a black stone.
I was in the library the other night, in the restricted section, and I read something rather odd about a bit of rare magic, and I thought perhaps you could illuminate me. It's called, as I understand it, a Horcrux.
Slughorn's weak smile evaporates altogether.
Excuse me?
Horcrux. I came across the term while reading, and I didn't fully understand it.
I'm not sure what you were reading, Tom, but that's very dark stuff. Very dark indeed.
Yes, sir, which is why I came to you. I mean no disrespect to the rest of the staff, but I thought if anyone could tell me, it would be you.
Slughorn frowns, clearly disturbed, then speaks quietly.
A Horcrux is an object in which a person has concealed part of their soul.
Yes, I thought it would be something like that. But I don't understand how that works, sir.
One splits one's soul and hides part of it in an object. By doing so, you are protected should you be attacked and your body destroyed.
Protected?
That part of your soul that was hidden lives on. In other words, you cannot die.
Riddle nods and turns away, staring at himself in the mirror on the opposite wall. A hint of red glints in his eyes.
How does one split his soul, sir?
I think you can guess the answer to that, Tom.
Murder?
Yes. Killing rips the soul apart. It is a violation against nature. After, one is never the same.
Out of curiosity, sir, can you only split your soul once? For instance, isn't 7 the most powerfully magical number?
7! Merlin's beard, Tom! Isn't it bad enough to think of killing one person? To rip the soul into 7 pieces. This is all hypothetical, isn't it, Tom? All academic.
Of course, sir. And I promise I'll not speak of our conversation. It'll be our little secret.
Riddle reaches out, then, and pinches the flame of a candle, killing it. As smoke rises, we dissolve into... Scene 117, Interior Dumbledore's Office... Same time, night. The surface of the pensieve, where Riddle quivers. We rack focus, and Dumbledore's troubled face bleeds through Riddle's.
Sir.
Dumbledore holds up his withered hand, silencing him, turns away. Harry studies him, waiting, the hush palpable.
This is beyond anything I imagined.
In my life, I have seen things that are unimaginably horrific. I know now, you will see worse.
Dumbledore looks off, his eyes distant. Harry watches him intently, as do the headmasters in their frames above. Finally, tentatively, Harry speaks.
You mean to say he succeeded, sir, in making a Horcrux?
Oh, he succeeded. And not just once. Think, Harry. He's just told us.
Seven. He made seven, the most powerfully magical number. But what are they exactly?
They can be anything. The most commonplace of objects. A ring, for example. Or a book.
Dumbledore slides open a drawer, removes the ring, and Tom Riddle's battered diary.
Tom Riddle's diary?
It's a Horcrux, yes. 4 years ago, when you saved Ginny Weasley's life in the Chamber of Secrets, when you brought me this, I knew.
This is a different kind of magic. Very dark, very powerful.
But until tonight, I had no idea just how powerful.
And the ring?
Belonged to Voldemort's mother. It was difficult to find, and even more difficult to destroy.
If you did find them all, if you destroyed each Horcrux...
One kills Voldemort.
Harry begins to reach out for the ring.
But how would you find them? They could be anywhere, couldn't they?
True, but magic. Especially dark magic.
Just then, as the flesh of Harry's fingers make contact with the ring, images flash by in dizzying succession. Voldemort's face, twisted in pain, a derelict house deep in a haunted clearing, an ancient cup gleaming as it tumbles from an old woman's hand, a snake, Nagini, slithering through damp grass, Dumbledore slipping the ring onto his finger, recoiling as his skin decays.
Leaves traces.
Harry's clenched hand spasms, releases. The ring skitters across Dumbledore's desk, and Harry brings a hand to his chest, a look of bewilderment on his face. Dumbledore watches the ring spin down, then glances at Harry and slowly extends his own hand, lightly touching the center of Harry's chest with the tips of two ashen fingers, as if reading Braille, as if he can somehow see into Harry's heart. Trepidation and recognition flicker over his face. He looks up, meets Harry's eyes.
It's where you've been going, isn't it, sir? When you leave the school.
Harry's eyes drift once again to the postcard on the desk. Dumbledore withdraws his hand, nodding. Still studying Harry oddly, his voice, when it comes, distant.
Yes, I think. Perhaps I may have found another. But
this time, I cannot hope to destroy it alone.
Harry peers into Dumbledore's eyes. Dumbledore nods.
Once again, I must ask too much of you, Harry.
Well, and what, so like, the first half was... it's basically a rerun of the earlier
script, yeah.
Falsified memory, right? The tampered memory. I think with the exception of maybe a change of one line. But
So next, there was a calendar picture of Dumbledore, the ring, and the diary together. And it's nice to see the diary back, and it's the exactly same one, and it's still got that basilisk hole in it.
I suppose that's from the actual film, whatever, I don't know. I think those are just kind of, for the calendar image, necessarily, like, the old, I guess, yeah, it wouldn't make sense that they wouldn't use a different diary, but.
Well, you hear that.
I mean, that's more of a, what the heck, like a painting. No, it's not an actual, not like it's an actual picture of the.
It's like a Photoshop together.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And then we have many images cropped up revolving around the sequence where images flash before Harry's eyes when he touches the ring. And this is my favorite part of the movie, if it's in it. And most of these pictures are just speculation that they're going to be at this part. But the first image is of Tom Riddle screaming, and that was in the ABC Family sneak peek. And then there's also...
Well, I mean, Nagini. Where else would it be? I don't know where else it would fit in.
Could be in the memory or something. And then there's also Nagini striking, which we've seen in a trailer or two. and there's Dumbledore trying on the ring, which was in the first trailer, and then there's an image of Dumbledore holding out his hand to Harry, yeah. Which is, where's the ring? If it, lightly touching the center of Harry's chest with the tips of his two ashened fingers as if reading Braille. And in that image, his hand's not special affected.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they want to hide that. So they did give us a little sneak peek at it in the second trailer. Also, yeah, they just want to hide it. So
I guess we just have a last comment then about the Horcruxes in the film in general.
Yeah, the test screen viewer has said, I honestly don't know if those not familiar with the book will understand the Horcruxes. I think they will understand what they do and how they work, but I'm not sure if it was clear Harry still needed to kill Voldemort in the end. I think it is just assumed. What I don't think a book reader will understand is the significance in the object is chosen as Horcruxes. I don't think the reason why Voldemort chooses those particular objects is not explained whatsoever. I don't think it was very ever mentioned that the locket was Slytherin's. Well,
yeah,
they needed to cut something. That's what I think.
Well, I guess. But do you cut the Horcruxes? I mean, honestly, that's like, I don't know, the memories revolving around that and the Horcrux and everything. I feel that that is quite possibly the most important element, plot line, whatever, in like the entire story. Like, it affects the ending.
But
the Horcruxes, combined with the Hollows, is what
does the fact that the Horcruxes are the Founder's and his ancestors' objects make any difference? Really?
Not as long as they figure out some other way for him to realize what they are and all that.
Only thing.
But the thing is the diagram. In the book, every single fan ended, put that book down, whatever, knowing that, okay, there is 6 Horcruxes. Two of them have already been destroyed, right? And 4 of them are most likely, or, do belong to the Founders. There's something from, was it Ravenclaw? They didn't know necessarily what it... Gryffindor or Ravenclaw. Gryffindor. Yeah, I can't remember exactly now, but we walked away knowing exactly almost what it was, other than the fact that we didn't know that it was the Diadem and Hufflepuff's cup necessarily, but we could guess it from the clues we'd been given.
What was that line? I'd like to in the book. Oh, well, whatever, I can't find it. When he was like snitching him off.
Anyway, or it was like a summary, whatever. Yeah,
the summary line, was it? But it said that people might not understand that they have to kill Voldemort too.
That would be a problem.
Well, they're going to be saying in Deathly Hallows that they have to kill Voldemort in the end too.
Yeah, let's hope the Horcruxes are referenced to again in Deathly Hallows. I don't know.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're going on this hunt, and we're not going to tell you what it's for. Yeah.
Well, that would be kind of like ending the first movie before they even say the word Deathly Hallows and having the title of it be Deathly Hallows Part 1. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's why you have to end after Xenophilius Lovegoods. Yeah, all you Ron comes back splitters, sorry, but yeah, we don't agree with you at all.
Yeah. Well, just the whole is going to be very convoluted. They're going to have to figure out some way to explain it to everyone simply, because you've just got, the Horcruxes and the Hallows and the blood protection and all those things going on at once and Wand
yeah,
War.
We've talked about Deathly Hallows too much.
Yeah.
Just remember that's
well, we're
not
done
till,
with,
like, next
we're done
year.
Chapter now. Hey, I'm excited for Deathly Hallows.
That's It's only 6 months to Half the Prince. Like 18 months to Deathly Hallows. So yeah, you do the maths.
I know, but we should have already seen Half the Prince by now, damn it. Anyways, does that wrap up?
That does wrap up, finally.
Yeah, wraps up all the chapters.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, I need to make a little announcement. From the next next episode on, we are planning to have a little mail segment. And so we want you to email us in. There's a few links on our site to do that. And there's also our email address, which is princemail@gmail.com. Oh, princemail, not with the princewatch@gmail.com. And there's, you can also do voicemails by recording it yourself, or there's an option to do it at Podomatic, but you have to be registered there. So we hope to include that next episode, or perhaps the next one after if it's not enough people. But we want to include that a bit later, definitely when the list ends, because we're going to have, we're preparing for when the list ends, because that's going to be soon. And yeah, so that's the show over. A shame it's only been two people.
See ya. Thanks for listening.
So this script was on IMDb. Some reliable person there. It wasn't unreliable. If it was unreliable, we probably would know about this one. I'm right to see this was.
Reliable that was unreliable that wasn't. What are you talking about?
I'm rambling.
Yes, you are.
Oh, that's what I thought. God. You freaking annoy me. Smile, it's only 6 months. Exactly.